Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. I'm your host, Adam Horner, and today we're tackling a challenge that every leader faces at some point: winning support for a difficult or contested issue from a large group. Whether you're trying to get buy-in for a major technology initiative, align executives on strategy, or simply convince your team that a new direction is the right one, the process of influencing a group can easily trip you up. I've been there quite a few times, actually. From securing stakeholder buy-in for a national scale government, a big software project, to another example is convincing a Norwegian enterprise customer I had to adopt a new approach to a long-standing issue. I've seen firsthand what works and what doesn't. I mean, I'll give you an example. I once needed some extra engineers to tackle some technical debt that I had inherited, and I joined a team as a team lead from outside the organization. My supporter was a CTO, and there were a few other folks in the group that I needed to convince, so I did what I thought was logical. I built a slide deck, I thought through all of the objections I could think of, incorporated that into my little pitch, and I joined the meeting, well-armed, or at least I thought I was. It turned out that I did the equivalent of bringing a knife to a gunfight. Within moments of starting talking, one of the sales leaders pretty much derailed my conversation. He started talking about hiring some sales development reps and painted the picture of a future with a fatter sales pipeline, more revenue on the horizon for less spend than my engineers would have cost. I was blindsided. My pitch was sidelined in moments with an argument that to me at the time made little sense and didn't hold water. But he had nodding heads most of the way around the table, so I sat down dejectedly, just looking at my CTO as he shrugged at me across the table. This playbook can save you from that fate. So I'm going to break this down into five clear stages that will help you build support effectively and avoid some of those common pitfalls. While I talk about large enterprises during this talk, I've also used personally and coached other CTOs to use these exact same techniques to great effect in much smaller organizations, including in startups. But before we get into the first of the five stages, ask yourself this. How many times have you had a great idea only to see it shot down in flames before it even had a chance really to be heard? Have you ever walked into a room expecting agreement, only to leave sometime later wondering why no one was on your side? If that sounds familiar and something you want to avoid, keep listening. This episode is for you. So let's start off with stage one then. Stage one is testing the waters. So before you go in on your proposal, before you build a slide deck, before you do anything, you need to take a pulse check. The worst thing you can do is assume you already know where everyone stands and believe you've got enough support without testing it. So what do we do? The technique is you start by having small, informal conversations with individuals or with small groups from your larger audience. As you do this, mentally categorize people into one of three groups. Are they on your side? They already see the value of the idea. They're proponents and supporters of this general concept. They get it, and they're going to support you in any vote or any conversation that's going to be had around this. Are they against you? They've got concerns, they have objections, they're likely to veto your approach, they're going to vote against you if it comes to a vote. They have a problem with the change itself or with just the very idea of change. And then you've got this group in between, the neutrals, the people who are unsure, people who don't care, the people who don't have a strong position, or maybe they haven't formed a solid opinion yet. If you can break everybody down into these three areas, you can understand the map of the landscape. You can figure out how much work you've got to do, and you should pick up some valuable insights through those conversations on why people support or oppose your idea, which is fairly critical for shaping your approach to how you move forward. So as an example, on a national government software project that I was working on, we discovered early on that while engineers were excited about the tech, there were some key policymakers who were skeptical about, let's call it, the security implications. And that insight shaped how the pitch was put together, how the proposal was shaped, and by some of the language that was used in there. later on to win support for it. But think about it. How often do we charge ahead with a plan and assume that support is there only to be blindsided like I was later on? This step, just understanding who is where, can really help you move forward and understand what you've got to do and prevent that assumption. So let's move on to stage two then. Understanding the numbers and setting yourself up to play the long game. So once you've got a sense of where people stand, how many people are supporting, how many people are against, and how many people are neutral, you need to figure out actually how much support do you need to move forward. So what constitutes an adequate majority in this group? Do you need just over half? Do you need two-thirds? Is there some sort of near-unanimous agreement you need to get to, some almost total agreement and total consensus? On the flip side, are there any veto players? There are sometimes certain stakeholders who have the power to just block a decision, even if the majority of the rest of the majority support you. An example might be the CEO in an executive team who, if he disagrees, no go. It could be the chairman of the board. If the chairman of the board has a full veto, it could be somebody who has highly weighted shares in a share structure, so they have a stronger vote than anybody else. And the other thing to understand is how much time is there available? If this decision needs to be made quickly, then you need to move fast and you need to understand which conversations are worth having in what order. If you've got plenty of time, or if you're facing lots of resistance and you need to take time, understand when are the meetings of this group coming up? When will you present your actual ideas to the group, to the point where it's a decision or a vote? And in the intervening time, how much time have you got to have conversations with how many people and how many of them can you get feedback from? In the large government department project that I was working on, there wasn't a formal vote in that group, but the group did need to ensure that nobody had a strong objection to block the initiative. So the strategy there was to make sure there was nobody who was going to veto it. And that meant working for many months, actually, to ensure that the concerns around security were addressed and those things were neutralized before any sort of presentation on the way forward was made. Also, have you ever been in a situation where the loudest voice in the room seemed to hold more weight than the majority? Decision by decibel, as it's being called by some people. If you can understand the dynamic of a group, of a team, and the way that the room is set up, the way that the group communicates, sometimes you can use that to your advantage to help you either make sure you corner that person, talk to them first, make sure that when they talk up, they talk in support of you, or making sure that other people talk and counterbalance that voice that's sometimes the loudest. Let's move on to stage three then. Stage three is taking those people who are supporting you and strengthening that support base. So strengthening your supporters. You can't win people over in one big speech. It can be done, but it takes real skill. If anybody has studied Shakespeare, and look, there's a wonderful speech in Julius Caesar made by Mark Antony, where he wins over an entire room of people. But it's a very skilled speech where he uses one phrase and turns it from something that he uses with respect to the same phrase said with scorn. But it takes an orator, it takes skill for that. And so rather than doing that, break it down into smaller groups, maybe even individually, and talk to people in smaller, more strategic interactions. So start with your supporters. They can help you refine your argument. They can help spread support. And one of the key things here is don't ask them for support. Ask them for feedback. Ironically, people are much more likely to support you when you ask for their thoughts rather than when you ask for outright agreement. People tend to get suspicious when you ask for agreement. So if you need support, ask for feedback. If you need feedback, ask for support. So with your supporters, ask for feedback. Incorporate the good ideas that you hear. Nothing makes people feel more invested in your position, in your proposal, than seeing their own suggestions reflected in the plan, in the idea, in what you're putting forwards. And then go to the opposite end of the spectrum and go and identify the potential converts. Talk to the people who oppose you on this issue. And remember, this time you want to get feedback to understand how you might be able to change some people over. So this time you ask for support and you'll get the feedback. Get the feedback from them. Understand the resistance. There might even be some people in there who are willing to shift their stance if their concerns are addressed or if their if they get to grips with the change and understand what the change means, so that it's less intimidating, less scary, less strange to them. In the Norwegian enterprise deal that I worked on way back, there was one key skeptic, really. And I found this person very early on. And instead of trying to just convince him, I asked for his support and got the feedback on how the plan could work better. And that enabled me to just make a couple of little shifts in what I was already planning to do. And that shift in dynamic ended up being quite strong. When others saw that I had converted his perspective over, that led him to being an advocate and led to some of the other people who had been neutral to being outright supporters. Some people hold a great degree of respect from others simply because of the amount of time they spent in the organization or because of how well connected they are across the organization. Don't underestimate that.
Hey, everyone. Quick question for you. Have you ever thought about starting a video podcast like this one? I want to introduce you to the team behind my show, Podigy. This podcast has been one of the best marketing tools for my business. And thanks to Podigy, all I have to do is record. They handle everything else. Editing, publishing, and making sure it's optimized perfectly for every platform. They're usually fully booked, but right now, I have a few spots open for new clients. As listeners of this show, you get 10% off launching your own podcast or optimizing your current one. All you need to do is follow the link in the description to book a free one-to-one podcast planning session with Podigy.
So what if, instead of trying to convince someone, you focus on just making them feel heard first? That shift can be very powerful. Now, before we continue, I want to put this episode about winning friends and influencing leaders into a broader perspective and just take a moment to talk about executive communication as a whole. If you find yourself struggling to make yourself heard in the boardroom, whether it's an executive leadership meeting or a conversation with investors, you're not alone. Many CTOs face this exact challenge. And here's the thing. As technologists and engineers, we often assume that logic and well-reasoned arguments should carry the conversation. But in executive settings, decisions are often won with emotion and narrative. These are skills that professionals in sales, in marketing, even operations, they've honed these skills for years. It's quite literally their job. So if you've ever watched someone with a weaker proposal win over the room while your solid, well-thought-out plan was overlooked, you know exactly what I mean. And that's where coaching comes in. A great coach helps you refine your messaging, equips you with more playbooks like this one. In short, they can help you master executive communication and use strategic storytelling to get your ideas across effectively. Most chief executive officers have a coach. So why not the CTO too? If you'd like to sharpen your executive presence and get the support you need to thrive in engineering leadership, follow the link in the show notes to my LinkedIn profile and get in touch. I'd love to have a chat. Talking of playbooks, let's get back to winning support for that big initiative. So stage four, we're going to go and talk to those people who are in the middle, the neutral zone, those who don't support but don't oppose your proposal either. These people, they're on the fence. They often need a reason to care. They may not oppose your idea, but they don't necessarily feel compelled to support it either. So what can we do? One tactic is to find adjacent issues that they do care about. Can you highlight benefits of your proposal that overlap with their priorities? Sometimes, just finding some little tiny change into what you're doing that allows somebody else to piggyback their big idea onto it can win a supporter from somebody who's neutral or not really bothered about what you're trying to put forward. In other words, it's a win-win situation if you can do that. If it's a big change or a big shift, it may not be worth it. So sometimes it's worth backing off so they don't become a detractor and not going to block you. A lot of the times it helps if you frame what you're putting forward as an opportunity, not a battle. So instead of focusing on winning or losing, make it about collective progress, moving forward as a group. And then lastly, you can sometimes win over those people in the middle if you use the social proof that you already have. You have a bunch of supporters, and if you can
if those key people in there, the people in the on the fence, in the middle, if they respect some of those key supporters and they're on board, sometimes it's easier for them to follow suit than it is to stay in the middle. Or sometimes you convince them that it's worth supporting because other people who have influence, who have built up that capital of trust, are supporting your initiative, then they can support it too. In the Norwegian deal that I was doing, I realized that one of the neutral stakeholders cared deeply about risk reduction. I reframed what I was planning to do to emphasize the solution and how it would reduce long-term operational risks. And that shift helped secure support from that person. How often do we ignore the neutral voices, assuming that they don't matter or won't have an impact? You can sometimes create a tipping point out of concentrating on these people who are otherwise not going to say much in any meetings. Stage five then, the presentation, the decision time. Let's make it into an action, not a decision. By this point, you've probably spoken to nearly everybody who's involved. You've tested ideas, you've addressed some concerns, you've probably modified your approach slightly, and you've gathered a bunch of support. So now it's time for the big moment. And the key thing here is we want to make it into an anticlimax. Instead of saying we need to make a decision today, we want to present it as the next logical step. Instead of should we do this, frame it as here's what we're doing next. Acknowledge all the contributions you've gained. Mention people by name who provided insights and point out the ideas that shaped the plan and brought it together. You're looking for those nods around the room. If you've done the work, people should be nodding in agreement rather than debating. And if you get that and you get the right number of people for this particular forum in agreement, then you know you've won. Rather than belaboring the point, resist the temptation to grandstand. It's not the time for it. Move on quickly. Once you've presented, transition the conversation to the next topic on the agenda. And if that's you, keep going. If it's somebody else, hand over smoothly and quickly. The less time you leave for debate and challenges, the better. To give you an example, the final presentation for this big government project that was going on, national level government project, it wasn't necessary to ask for a vote. It wasn't normal in that scenario. But the steps that were already started to be taken were outlined. The contributors were called out for the contributions that they had made, for the steps that they had incorporated into it. And that just confirmed that everybody was aligned. It was a smooth, uncontested rollout from there onwards, and the conversation moved on. And it ended up being a wonderful anticlimax. And that pretty much is exactly what you want. When was the last time you saw a decision meeting turn into a debate that went around in circles and ultimately went nowhere? If you can avoid that moment where the objections start coming forwards, conversations start coming out, then you can really help that. For recent times, we've had a lot of remote working. So one of the things I just wanted to quickly address is a couple of times recently where people have asked me in a fully remote setting, when there aren't these water cooler moments and we want to start talking to people about this initiative that we have, this idea that we want to bring forward, how do we create those water cooler moments in a fully remote setting when social interaction is significantly less than it was in person? So there's a couple of answers to this, but probably the simplest one is to use the time before meetings when people, you know, just beginning to get online, turning the cameras on, joining the meeting. Join the meeting early. And when people are getting on, you know, turning on the cameras, greet people by name. Ask and be curious about non-work things, family, friends, sports. In the UK, the weather's a good topic, for example. Greet each person into the conversation rather than just continuing the conversation that you've got with people going, greet each new person into the conversation and involve them. And after a couple of minutes, just drop in a short and quick question that's pointed to your issue, to the group, about your topic to get some instant feedback. Don't take more than a reasonable amount of time. That's usually less than 5 minutes. And then if anybody wants to continue the conversation, offer to take the conversation to another meeting and arrange that at another time. Don't disrupt the original meeting. So don't take too long at the beginning, just enough to drop your idea in, get the question out, perhaps start some conversation going on later on, but then hand back over to the organizer of the meeting so that can carry on so you're not disruptive. And then organize straight after that meeting, so any follow-on meetings that have been arranged that you want to have or any conversations you want to have, instant message, email, Teams, Slack, etc. But don't do that during the meeting because you're focusing on the meeting at hand, right? And then obviously one-to-one conversations, you can put that into your individual face-to-face conversations. You can ask people for, you know, a five-minute chat, a quick call over the video, etc. So that's the way to try and create those social interactions, those opportunities to test your ideas and to raise the idea or the proposition you have in groups when you've got fully remote meetings and people otherwise don't have sort of the spare time or the accidental interactions to raise it, talk about it, and learn about it. So let's summarize the playbook then. So five stages we went through. Number one, test your ideas. Figure out who is for it, who's against it, and who's on the fence. Stage two, compare how much support you have to how much you need for this particular group, and then make a plan accordingly. Number three, win friends and influence people. So reinforce your supporters, confirm the resistors. Number four, convince those people who are sort of on the bench, the people who are on the fence. Find some of the tangential issues that you can include to perhaps win some of them over. Use the social capital of the people who are supporting you to perhaps win a few more people to support as well. And then number five, present as action rather than as a decision. And there you go. That's it for today's episode. I hope this resonated with you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Until next time, folks, keep leading with impact. Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you are listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.